Welcome back to More Than Money on 770 CHQR. You're here with Dave today. I'm flying solo, but I've got a terrific guest who's stuck around for an extra segment today. Noah Blackstein, he's Vice President and Senior Portfolio Manager at Dynamic Funds. Noah, thanks for sticking around for another segment. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
So you did a pretty good job of, I think, identifying some key themes that were working before and have just accelerated, given the current state of the economy. I am interested in talking a little bit about some of the risks that you see going forward. You've already identified the fact that, you don't have a crystal ball. You don't know how long this is going to last and what exactly the policy decisions are going to be. But I think I want to dig into a little bit more on that. But before we get there, I get a common question, and I'm just at a high level. What is the relationship with oil and the general economy? So lots of the news coverage, as these historic oil price swings have taken place, we get, negative futures contract rates for short periods of time, and it sort of throws the market into turmoil, equities. And I get lots of questions of that. Could you just walk us through your thinking at a high level as a portfolio manager of that relationship and what, if anything, you should be paying attention to in the longer term?
The oil market is it's a strange market and a crazy market in terms of the players involved. And clearly there was deliberate efforts to drive down oil prices with the Russians and the Saudis.
Yeah.
So there's geopolitics involved in this market. It's not just a completely free market based on supply and demand. That's for sure. You also have the production. The U.S. is, I think, became the largest oil producer in the world, and you have, the Saudis and the Russians. I think a number of years ago, an attack on the Saudi facilities by Iranian-backed militia, which is the world's largest oil depot, would have sent oil prices up $40-$50, and it had no impact. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the U.S. is one of the largest, if not the largest oil producer in the world these days because of shale.
Yep.
And so I think that there's geopolitics involved with trying to deliberately shut down not only the Canadian oil sands, but also the shale oil in the U.S. by foreign countries. I think that's a given. I think that's been widely discussed. And so there's geopolitics involved in this. And then there's obviously the issues with an ETF called USO that exists. Which was, I'm not a big fan of ETFs, but this was an ETF that tried to track oil prices by buying the front month futures contract.
Right.
And at one point owned perhaps a quarter of the outstanding volume. And so, when they roll these future contracts, they've consistently lost money. Oil prices going negative was them selling into a market that just didn't exist. So there are non-supply and demand issues around oil prices that are just completely, a little bit more difficult if you're just trying to say, well, what's the demand and what's the supply of oil? But
yep.
There's a lot of oil right now out there. There's no question about it. I think it's going to hurt the U.S. in terms of employment. Shale's been a very large employer in the last little while. Obviously, it has impacts on Canada and Mexico. Definitely, I think, places like Japan and China, who are net importers, are probably going to be better off in this environment, given the lower oil prices. And I think coming out of this, consumers will probably be better off. That doesn't necessarily, help in Alberta for sure, but certainly in other areas where the consumers are, it's a consumer-based economy, it's obviously stimulative to those consumers as well. So,
yeah.
I think net-net is probably a slightly bigger negative to the U.S. economy than a positive. And we'll have to see how it all plays out. But there are geopolitical questions, which are very difficult to answer in terms of what the Saudis and what the Russians decide to do.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Okay, let's talk on a broader basis, if you can. You've got some themes. What are some of the risks that you're watching? And I ask this from a retail investor's perspective, because there's just so much negative news, so much fear. With respect to the health component of the virus, it's very hard sometimes to identify what the real risks are that they should be looking at from an investment perspective and managing that versus just the emotional reaction to all, just terrible negative data.
Well, I think for sure, if I could frame it in the opportunities, I think you know, I look at what's happened here, and I do see the opportunities longer term in the healthcare space, the opportunities longer term in obviously technology and cloud computing and other things like that, not just in the U.S., but globally. So there are opportunities. There's no question about that. There are obviously risks. The risks are, you know, the malls and retailers around the world have been suffering for lower traffic to malls because of e-commerce and other things like that. The question becomes, you know, do people come back to malls? And there's just, you know, every day is another bankruptcy, you know, whether it's a JCPenney or Neiman Marcus or perhaps a Macy's, or troubles at the Gap is running out of money and other things like that. So, you know, the traditional mall-based retailers in the United States are at huge risk. And it obviously plays into the hands of a Walmart, into a Costco, to an Amazon, to a Kroger and companies like that. But there are risks in terms of what is the impact of these malls closing down? What is the exposure to these overall malls and stuff like that? And in terms of pension funds and other things like that. So that's a risk, I think. I think the, I'm not 100% sure how government was able to do all of this without legislation, but they seem to have. No one's challenged it yet to the Supreme Court in terms of the Charter of Rights or the Bill of Rights or whatever it is. But the other risk is that, you know, when do some of these restrictions come off? When is it enough, and how long does it go for? And I you know, I'm not here to argue what they did was right or wrong, but the longer it goes for, you know, today in Canada, for example, the government announced that you know, they would be kicking in with the provinces and the landlords to cover forgivable loans of up to 75% of rent. Well, for how long?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and how big? And so you start to look at these ballooning amounts of debt, the government coming in, giving away money and stuff like that. It had to be done because they did this because of the virus and the shutdown. The question is, how long does it last? What does it do to the deficit and the debt? And so, you know, the U.S. will spend nearly $3 trillion. And the Federal Reserve has added almost $3 trillion in terms of asset buying onto its balance sheet. So we're talking about some pretty serious debt and deficit numbers that are going on out there. And I think, you know, you need to think as an with interest rates at near 0%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do need to think as an investor, you do need to be cognizant of what is the longer term impact of all of this debt and spending. And the answer is, you know, just like we don't know the medical and policy questions, we can't quite figure out what the impact of all of this debt is going to be. It's a very, very low interest rates, and it's not a bad idea for them to lock it in with 50 or 100-year bonds. But we really just don't know what the impact is going to be.
Yeah, fair. Now, we've got about a minute, maybe a minute and a half here, and maybe I'll just get your thoughts on your global focus, your global fund. You can go nearly anywhere. What do you have any insights? What economies do you think are the best, or is it just case by case, company by company specific? Any comments you have on that?
Yeah, you know, I've never really paid attention to indexes or benchmarks or industries or geographies. My focus has always been trying to find 20 to 25 of the fastest growing companies with the biggest upside potential over the next 3 to 5 years, wherever they reside globally. And you know, today, you know, that could be in an e-commerce company in China. It could be in a online gaming company in Southeast Asia. It could be in, you know, payments companies in Europe or in U.S. healthcare companies. And so we'll go anywhere in the world to find companies that have the opportunity to be significantly larger in terms of both revenues and earnings over the next 3 to 5 years. And if they can do that, then I think that the stock price will follow those companies. So, you know, I don't really focus in on macro. I don't really focus in making sure I have a stock in each country in the world. We just go everywhere we can find the fastest companies. You know, we've had as high as 50% in China, for example, and today,
right,
you know, we're down to 13%. You know, we've had the U.S. has been 50% of the portfolio. The U.S. has been 25% of the portfolio. You know, Europe has been zero, and Europe has been, so it's not, we don't really look at things that way. We're really just looking globally for the fastest growing companies. with the biggest potential upside to their stock prices over the next 3 to 5 years.
Love it, Noah. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you carving out some time for us today.
Please stay safe to you and all your listeners.
You too, my friend. Okay, we've been joined by Noah Blackstein. He's a vice president and senior portfolio manager at Dynamic Funds, and we do appreciate his time. We're wrapping up this segment pretty quickly, but I want to remind you that we're going to be doing our next seminar. It's not going to be live in person, but it is going to be live through the internet. We're going to do that on Tuesday, May the 19th, and I encourage you to register for this. We have a terrific session in April. May 19th is going to be our next 7 o'clock as usual. But to register, you have to go to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com. We look forward to seeing you on May 19th, and I look forward to chatting with you again next week. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of More Than Money on 770 CHQR.
David Popowicz and Faisal Karmali are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowicz and Faisal Karmali do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets, Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets, Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.